Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris on today's Australian Open semi-finals catch-up.
Sinner stuns Djokovic to reach his first slam final.
Sabalenka one win from a second title.
And Medvedev fights back in five for a comeback victory.
Chris, today is the 26th of January. We are here to catch up on the semi-finals of the Australian Open here at Tennis Weekly HQ. We've got our finals in the men's and women's singles nicely laid up, ready for a weekend of hopefully very exciting, dramatic tennis to get our teeth into. Sabalenka against Zhang and Sinner against Medvedev. It still feels weird to not be having Novak Djokovic in an Australian Open final come Sunday. We'll be getting on to all of that, what happened, all the fallout, as well as that epic comeback from Daniil Medvedev in the second men's semi, which only finished a couple of hours ago. They yet again played late into the night. But before we begin, Chris, I'm feeling quite smug because I've managed to find a jar of Vegemite.
No, surely not. I thought Joel couldn't find it in London. So where did you find this?
Well, I'm actually up in West Yorkshire at the moment, in lovely Saddleworth Moor, and I found it in a supermarket here. So if I can find it
in Yorkshire,
then yeah. Joel should be able to get it in London. So Joel, the quest is on. I hope you're listening to this, and I hope you're going to scour the shops this weekend because we're very much looking forward to doing a Vegemite taste test come Sunday.
See,
and Chris, you're
going to
raid the British supermarket as well, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to try, but I've got to be honest. I'm actually a real enthusiast of Vegemite, and I even drink it as a hot drink. So,
Format
are we having it? It's weird. Yes, it's weird.
Never heard of anyone having it as a hot drink.
A hot Vegemite, never.
How does it kind of dissolve in liquid?
Give it a stir. Yeah, exactly. Right. And then you have quite a nice, I mean, I think it's quite nice. I think it's for British listeners, a bit like a hot Bovril, I think is what people used to have back in the day. But I've said before, I mean, I'm a traditionalist, but maybe I'm just very outdated in my taste as well.
I mean, it's full of B vitamins, so I'm sure there's a lot of nutritional qualities to it.
It's for my health.
It's for your health. I'm just trying to imagine doing that with like some peanut butter and putting that in hot liquid. And I'm just, that's
hot
not
milk?
That's not going
a
well.
Warm milkshake?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah, peanut butter milkshake. I wonder if Morgan Riddle would prefer Vegemite in a hot liquid.
Maybe I'll DM her and say it's better if you drink it.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if Novak Djokovic has Vegemite. I mean, it is vegan. He maybe could have done with some of it because he needed it today. He needed some extra oomph.
B vitamins.
He did not play well. He lost to Sinner. Four sets. 6-1, 6-2. What a scoreline in those first two sets. 6-7, 6-3. Jannik Sinner is into his first Grand Slam final. When I saw this result, I was somewhat surprised, but mostly by the scoreline in those opening sets, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I woke up this morning and switched on immediately, and it was just coming to the end of that fourth set. So I didn't see them live, and I have rewatched them. And it's very uncharacteristic from a Djokovic perspective. And normally Djokovic doesn't like to take things away from his opponents after a match. He will say he was outplayed and kind of sometimes leave it at that. When we've obviously seen he's been struggling physically and hasn't played his best tennis. And this time he really did kind of just lay it out there saying, you know, it was one of the worst Grand Slam matches he's ever played in those first two sets. And I mean, you look at the stats from them, Kim, and it's unheard of in terms of what went down there, because previously I think we're seeing him well into the positives when it comes to the winner's unforced errors ratio. But I mean, he hit 5 winners and 15 unforced errors, which is just, it's unheard of. And only 4 unforced errors for Sinner. I mean, you're not going to get it done in that first set. And if you look at the second set, I mean, it's much the same story. 14 unforced errors to 6 winners. And then Sinner again, just 4 unforced errors. So Sinner ran a tight ship and Djokovic really was missing.
Djokovic was all at sea. Yeah, 54 total unforced errors in the match. And I think the most remarkable statistic, which I think is doing the rounds a lot, people are commenting on it, is the fact that Djokovic did not earn a single break point against Jannik Sinner. And this is the first time in any of his many, many matches at a Grand Slam that he has failed to get a single break point, to even earn one, you know, to even have the chance to break. That is, I think, a shocking, shocking statistic.
Especially for someone who's considered to be probably one of the best returners that's ever played the game, who has a phenomenal return of serve. That really is surprising. And I guess if it says in a Grand Slam ever, that's even like his first Grand Slams when he first came onto the tour and might have been playing against like a seeded player as like a 17-year-old or something. So who would have predicted that would happen, that stat would come up, especially kind of in his, you know, his home court in Australia. I mean, a court where he's seen so much success previously. I think it was almost kind of unfathomable before this that someone other than Djokovic would take this, given kind of what's happened previously, given his success, 10 titles. I mean, he'd never lost a semi-final here, I believe, Kim. What do you think about the performance? Was it the unforced errors, or do you think it was kind of Sinner's superb play?
I think it's a combination of the two. You know, we haven't seen the best of Novak Djokovic this tournament. He dropped, you know, a number more sets than he would perhaps usually drop, especially in his opening matches. We thought he'd kind of turned a tide against Adrian Mannarino with that, you know, emphatic win. But I think clearly he hasn't been playing overall his best tennis here. You know, he had those kind of wrist struggles at the United Cup prior to the event. He said he was feeling unwell with a kind of virus at the start of the tournament as well. So he's been below par this tournament. However, you know, I do think you absolutely cannot take away from Jannik Sinner, like how he's played this whole tournament. You know, he was being really, really aggressive, serving great, moving Djokovic around the court. And I think above all, his mentality, very calm, very composed. You know, he lost he had a match point in the third set and it went to a fourth. That could have derailed someone quite easily. You know, you're up against Djokovic on the court that he loves so much. You know, Djokovic has never lost a semi-final here. You know, going into a fourth, he might have been having panic stations, but so impressive the way that he just kind of regrouped, got the job done in four.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the Darren Cahill effect, and that might be a big turning point for him when Darren joined his team, because he's had so many great results since then. It's almost like a switch has been flicked compared to what we were witnessing at some of the slams last year. I mean, I was in Paris watching him play against Altmaier, and I mean, when you watch what he's doing now on a tennis court and you watch what he did back then, he always had the game, but he can just completely kind of go off the boil. And when he starts missing, he can really miss. And it feels like that's what's sort of shifted, is that his belief is almost unwavering in his shots, and he's just been hitting them with such conviction. And this will be his third victory in his last 4 matches with Novak Djokovic, which I'm not sure many players on the tour right now could boast such a positive recent head-to-head against Djokovic. So, question I pose to you, Kim, has Sinner got Djokovic's number now?
Oh, well, I mean, Sinner has got everyone else's number, because the only person he's lost to in the last few months in his past 20 matches is Novak Djokovic at the ATP finals in the final. So he's unbeaten against, you know, anyone else, which will hold him in good stead, hopefully, going into the final against Medvedev. I do think, though, yeah, obviously we didn't see the best from Djokovic today. That did play a factor. And I do think that, you know, the last time we saw Djokovic defeated by one of the young hopes, you know, Alcaraz Wimbledon final, he then put together a very impressive run of form afterwards. He didn't let it, you know, knock him down. He's too good for that. So I do expect Djokovic to come back. I don't think it's going to be a case of, you know, Sinner having his number for the rest of time. I mean, obviously Djokovic a lot older, you know, other challenges going into the sort of twilight years of his career perhaps, but I don't think this is the end of the road for Djokovic. I don't think his fans need to panic just yet. But I think this will have done Sinner the world of good, getting that win at a slam, getting that tick in the box. It's very different getting it at a slam compared to, you know, a Masters series or even the Davis Cup.
And he made that point afterwards. He did say, going into this, that the results he'd had previously, although it is good kind of getting wins over Djokovic coming into this, it is completely different on this sort of a stage. And I think everyone is aware of the sort of level that Djokovic can bring. Sometimes, as we've said, like when he has had injury problems or he hasn't been playing his best tennis, he does just find it and he can kind of blow someone off the court completely with some of his shot making as well as some of his just, I mean, his skill on the court. And I think that's where Sinner will need to continue to kind of play in this vein. You can't really question your game. I mean, if he's serving this well, I think that will put him in a better stead than maybe Alcaraz coming out of Wimbledon, because he does get a lot more free points and it did have a really big impact on the game today. That's something that really stood out when you look at the numbers that are attached to it, that not only was he returning really well, but he was also serving phenomenally well. I mean, he hit 9 aces and just 1 double fault. Which is, that's great, and 83% of first serve points won. So that's something where I think he has got the edge over some of the top four competitors in terms of the service. And I think that will put him in good stead, kind of at whatever tournament he's playing at. But I mean, I don't want to brag too much about this. I haven't brought it up yet, Kim. I've been very respectful.
I was going to ask you how smug you are feeling. Yeah.
Okay. How smug do I look right now for our listeners?
Yeah, you've got a big grin on your face, I have to say. I mean, Ben Rothenberg did say that you'd be an idiot not to predict Djokovic. And, you know, me and Joel, we did both predict Djokovic. But you win the... you may have got the slam spoon of shame in our collector set, Chris, but you've well and truly redeemed yourself by picking Sinner for the win. Although, you know, he hasn't won the tournament, has he?
He hasn't won it yet. That is true. And we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves, right, in terms of that result. Obviously, predicting this semi-final and the win is great, but again, this could just go down as a fantastic win against Djokovic at a slam, as opposed to, you know, the first slam that you've won. And, you know, standing in his way is a formidable opponent, an opponent that he's played an awful lot in the last couple of years. And I think that's probably something where a lot of people will think, you beat Djokovic, you almost should just be allowed to have the slam. Like, you've done the hardest part here, and therefore you should just be given it. Take the trophy, or maybe you get like a special medal at the end of it to say that you managed to take him out. But he's got Daniel Medvedev in the final, doesn't he, Kim?
I know. Yeah, I feel like if you beat Djokovic, you should get like, I don't know, an extra, what's it, the green jersey in cycling, or like a 147 break in snooker. You get some
extra the most aggressive rider in the cycling. So maybe get the most aggressive tennis player.
But yeah, Daniel Medvedev will be looking for his first Australian Open title as well. So it is all to play for. And Medvedev, you know, has way more experience. He's won a Grand Slam. He's been in this particular final twice already. So he, you know, he's still a very experienced, very, very difficult opponent. And he showed that today, because he came back from 2 sets down yet again this tournament to beat his rival. You know, they don't get on too well. There's a bit of a grudge match between them, Sasha Zverev. He was trailing 7-5, 6-3, got the third and fourth sets back on 2 tie breaks. And then the momentum was with him in the fifth set. He was by far the better player, 6-3. He clinched it just after midnight local time. Zverev will be obviously extremely disappointed. This isn't the first time he's lost from 2 sets up at the deep end of a slam. And Daniel Medvedev, you know, once again has escaped from the brink of defeat. We were talking the other day how he'd been plotting his flight paths home 2 sets down against Emil Roussevori and in the match against Hubert Hurkacz. But here, you know, yet again, he said that he just had to kind of go for it and go all out. He didn't want to have left the court regretting anything. And that's what he did. And he came back yet again.
He did. And that's something that he said he's really been working on, is the mental side of tennis. And sometimes he said he kind of had lost those 5 sets previously, those 5-set matches. And this time he said he really wanted to change this and to kind of have even more of a strong mentality. And I think that's something that's so impressive, because he did say that he was actually feeling quite tired after the first 2 sets. He didn't have that much energy at that time. And then he still managed to find a way to come back and turn those tie breaks around. And especially for Zverev, a massive missed opportunity when he had 5-4. In the fourth set tiebreak, and he had 5-4 on his serve. And that's one of those things with the Zverev serve. It is a fantastic weapon, but it should be a fantastic weapon given the height that he has. But he's got to land first serves, and he's really got to make sure that he gets those 3 points in tie breaks, because when you see someone of his stature, some of the big servers don't often lose tie breaks. And I think at times he does fall foul of that, especially in those big moments and kind of that final set tie break at the US Open final, where it doesn't necessarily think that he has the strongest mentality in these moments. Sure, you could say he has a good record in battling apart some of these opponents, but you could also argue that he shouldn't necessarily be taken to a fifth set all the time, or taken to such long matches with the weapon he has to shorten the points. So I think for Medvedev, this was a really big victory in proving to himself that whatever situation he's in, he can come through it. And especially going to the final, if it's about mental strength, he's going to need it, having spent so much time on court in the last kind of 2 weeks. And he'll need that final bit of kind of mental kind of resolution to get himself straight the way through this final. And if it goes long, there's a question there, I think, in terms of the fitness side of things.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was 2 points from defeat today. He went for it. He's come through yet again. He's been up, you know, he's had his back against the wall a lot this tournament. But sometimes that, you know, it could be like one step too far come the final. You know, he said he's been feeling physically, mentally kind of drained and tired, but he still managed to come through. Could he do the same again? You know, if it's going into a long match come Sunday, a long battle, you know, he's had to battle his way through. Sinner's come through a lot more smoothly. Yes, he had, you know, dropped a set to Djokovic today. He was down in that second set tiebreak to Rublev in the quarterfinal. But Medvedev's really had to battle. And actually, if they get into a battle come Sunday, I have a feeling that's going to benefit Daniil. I think, you know, he's got some time to recover. I think he's just going to give it one last shot. And stranger things have happened. You know, I think it makes you more up for the fight. It will come as less of a surprise. And we don't know how Jannik Sinner's going to be in his first Grand Slam final. He's not been there before. Medvedev has. So I think Medvedev's mentality is probably perhaps going to be a bit more, oh, I wasn't expected to kind of get this far the way I've been playing. I've been up against it. I'm just going to go out there and see what I can do. Perhaps. I don't know. I mean, he will be nervous as well. He's going to be trying to get this title for the third time, you know, third time lucky in the final. Those memories from when he lost from two sets up to Nadal 2 years ago, maybe that will all come flooding back and he'll kind of experience that trauma on the court again. It's going to be really fascinating from, you know, both sides, I think, to see what unravels.
That's a great point as well, because we're talking about how good he is at coming back from behind. But what if he's up? You know, that might also be a difficult position to be in, having kind of been having to be so strong in the moments where he's been behind. And then things are very different when it's kind of laid out in front of you, a bit like what happened with Zverev in this match, when, I mean, arguably your thoughts can get away from you and you can try and kind of want it too badly and you can get a bit tense at those moments. And I think something that was quite amusing was that someone who was not tense in these moments, obviously Medvedev, it was this shot. I'm not sure if you saw it, Kim. It was at 5-all in the fourth set tiebreak. Zverev slams this serve down and Medvedev did like a slice sort of overhead, like drop shot. And Zverev couldn't reach it, but he was asked afterwards, did he mean to do this? He said, well, I meant to slice it, but I didn't mean it to be a drop shot. And it turned out to be like one of the most important points of the whole match that set up that set point for him. Do you think he was playing it down? Was it luck or was it just a stroke of genius?
Probably a bit of both. Well, I don't know. Sometimes these things are just flukes and, you know, luck's on your side. And I don't want to use the K word because that's been banded around quite a bit at the moment after the match. A lot of people thinking that Daniil Medvedev said the word karma at the end of the match, which would be a break point. Well, he said he didn't. So he said that he was talking towards his team.
He also said he didn't swear at the French crowd in Paris-Bercy. And I think we all know that he did put the middle finger up there.
So we don't know yet, Kim. Yeah, we don't know if that shot was luck or genius. He's playing with us. We just don't know. But yeah, two of them don't get on. One of the recent Breakpoint episodes kind of was focusing around their rivalry. Zverev saying that, you know, not very nice things about Medvedev, and mentioning, you know, that he believes in karma. So there's a lot of talk that, you know, perhaps Medvedev was referencing this at the end of the match. But he denies it, but we will see. I mean, they don't get on, so this will not have helped, you know, going forwards. I'm sure Zverev's going to feel quite bitter about this loss. But, you know, at the end of the day, Zverev didn't get the job done when he could. You know, he was two sets up. He was 2 points from the win. He had opportunities and he didn't rise to the occasion in that fifth set. So he needs to go away and, you know, give a long, hard look at what he can do to avoid this situation. And obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on with him in the press and the media at the moment with regards to the allegations against him for domestic violence. Like, he is going up in court back in Germany in May with regards to the allegations from his ex-girlfriend about the domestic violence. And he was actually asked about that in press, wasn't he, Chris?
Yes, he was. And he gave a very similar answer, a very familiar answer to anyone who has followed this, where he said, anyone who has a semi-decent IQ level understands. And that's what he said, and obviously understands what's going on. He hasn't necessarily elaborated on that, but I would kind of argue that maybe the judge who issued the penalty order, who said there was sufficient evidence not to go to trial, probably does have a semi-decent IQ. But, like, I mean, semi-decent. I mean, in the UK, semi-decent. It's kind of a good result. So, like, a good IQ, does that mean? Or does that mean a not very high IQ? I think that's probably where, you know, we tend to downplay things in the UK in that sense. But either way, I think that's probably not the most respectful response at this time. But we do have a duty to make sure that people are aware of this. There's a lot of talk about it. And that when it comes to what will happen at the end of this whole proceedings, it's still unclear in terms of whether the ATP will take action. And I think now it's about waiting 5 months to get a verdict, because it's clear that he's not going anywhere, and that it will go to trial, and then there will be a result from that trial. And whether people choose that they'd like the result or they don't, that will be on them. But we are waiting for that for now.
Yeah, it's not something that's particularly mentioned in commentary, so you could quite well, you know, watch the tennis and not know about these, because it's not something that, I guess, is brought up comfortably in the middle of the tennis match. But yeah, that's scheduled for May. So a lot of people will be thinking, you know, this is karma that Zverev has not got the win today. So we do have Medvedev against Sinner in the final. Medvedev does have a winning head-to-head over Jannik Sinner, 6-3. However, Sinner has won the last three matches on the trot, which all fell at the latter end of last year. So they have played quite a bit recently, and Sinner's been getting the job done in all of those matches. Do you think Medvedev can reverse the kind of what seems to be one-way traffic in the recent head-to-head?
I think, so I was actually at the final in Vienna, and I did think that they were, of the tennis I've seen recently, in recent years, it was the highest level that I'd seen from two individuals. It was fantastic watching them play, because Medvedev does have a slightly more defensive game, and then Sinner is just hitting winners for fun. And it made for a highly entertaining final, and it made for a particularly entertaining final when Medvedev stepped up in the court and played aggressive tennis and took some of that time away from Sinner. And I think that's what's going to have to happen if Medvedev is going to get the result. Or he would have to hope that Sinner, kind of in the moment, in his first final, doesn't necessarily find his form due to nerves. You know, some of the footwork, that can be something that can go with nerves, and there can be tension in your arm. But you can't rely on that. So I'd say if Medvedev is able to really step up into the court and play aggressive tennis, I think we could be in for maybe a nail-biting five-setter. But if he doesn't, I do think that Sinner is playing the sort of tennis that could cause a significant problem to anybody. I mean, he dismantled Novak Djokovic in three of the four sets that they played, didn't face a break point. If he serves like that, there's plenty of reason with Medvedev's return position that he might not face another break point.
Yeah, I just, it's really tricky. I do think, and I hope that we will get a classic, because based on, yeah, like the match in Vienna, it was a close one, you know, and I think we could very well be on for a fantastic final if they both turn up. And I've just got a funny feeling about Medvedev. I have to say, I'm worried that Sinner's going to have a bit of
a... You just don't want me to get the win,
letdown. No, honestly, it's not that. I'd be more than happy if Sinner won the title. I do think he's played the best tennis. I think, you know, not just at this tournament, but over the last, you know, 6 months, I think he totally deserves it. But I think Medvedev also battling his way through like this, you can't say he wouldn't deserve it either. So I hope we're on for a fantastic final. But I've just got a funny feeling about Medvedev. I think if it goes long, he's going to marathon man
it through.
He's rock
solid
again,
in those moments.
Perhaps,
he really is. Yeah.
I'm going to go Medvedev in five as my prediction.
Ooh. I honestly think it could be Sinner in three. I really do.
Ooh, I think we're quite different then, aren't we, on this one?
We are. We are today. It makes for an entertaining kind of result here. Like, maybe we'll both be completely wrong and it will be, I don't know, someone will win in four.
In four, yeah. Well, we'll see what Joel thinks as well. But listeners, what do you think? Let us know on our social media. We will be having a very short break now, but we'll be back, not before long, to discuss the ladies' semi-finals from Melbourne Park and previewing the ladies' final, which gets underway tomorrow. So do not go anywhere.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast. And now we're going to move on to looking back and reflecting upon the ladies' semi-finals from Thursday, which saw Aryna Sabalenka and Qinwen Zheng make their way through to the final. We have the defending champion up against a first-time finalist. But let's look at how they got there. Aryna Sabalenka defeating Coco Gauff in straight sets, 7-6, 6-4. She's got her revenge, Chris, on the US Open final loss way back in September. And she actually becomes, as a result, the very first player since Serena Williams to have reached back-to-back Australian Open finals. So Serena did it back in 2016 and 2017. Aryna Sabalenka has done the business, and she'll be hoping to do a Victoria Azarenka. Victoria Azarenka being the last player to win back-to-back titles. So, of course, a fellow Belarusian. What do you think of Sabalenka in the final? I mean, what do you think of the match against Gauff? Do you think, based on what you saw from her, she's still looking on for the win come tomorrow?
I mean, you would probably have to think she's definitely the favourite based on the fact that she hasn't lost a set so far. She's just been playing some unbelievable tennis. She did come very close, though, to losing a set. She did go up, and it looked like it would be a pretty straightforward first set before Coco Gauff actually broke back and got to level terms before she did kind of lose that first set. And there was, I think, a couple of points away from losing it. So there was a bit of a test there, but she did come through it. And that's kind of all the more reason, you know, to think that this was probably a great match for her and a great test for her going into the final. On Coco Gauff, I thought this was quite interesting because at the time I really did defend her when she won the US Open, because I think it was Mats Wilander that said, kind of the first thing he said was that she didn't play well. It didn't hit the forehand well, didn't play that well in that victory. And I think it's that whole point with this debate we talked about on the previous podcast of winning ugly. And so she said she actually played a lot better at this. She didn't play obviously well in her last match, but she compared it to the last time she played Sabalenka. And she said that she played better in this match, even though she lost, than she did in that US Open final. And the stats also support that. She was in the positive. She was +2 winners to unforced errors in the match that she played against Sabalenka. But the big difference was the unforced errors, where she actually hit 19 unforced errors in that US Open final to 13 winners. So she was in a positive difference there in Australia versus US Open. So she took the positives from it. And I think there are a lot of positives for Sabalenka in terms of putting that US Open result behind her, where she wasn't able to kind of come through some of those clutch moments. So in every test she's faced, she sailed through, Kim. So I would have to say, and I'm sure you'll agree, that she is definitely the favourite going into the final.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, Coco Gauff wasn't at her best, even though she felt, you know, she was playing a higher level than that US Open final. She wasn't at her best in this semi. You know, her first serve percentage was right down. A lot of double faults. You know, she was 2 points away from getting that first set. Sabalenka came through quite an up and down first set. But I think, yeah, this, you know, she had, I think, her toughest test to date. But she's come through, has Sabalenka. And I feel like overall, yeah, she's been the best player that we've seen on the women's side this tournament. And it does look likely on, you know, according to the form book and on paper, that she will get the win in the final. And I think, you know, she's dispatched, you know, a Grand Slam champion in Coco Gauff in the semi-final. And, well, she will actually be up to number two in the world as well, regardless of whether she wins her second Grand Slam title tomorrow. She's up to number two in the rankings.
And it is very impressive. I was going to say, obviously, the fact that she has made so many semi-finals in a row, and now she's made another final, which is hugely impressive. But we kind of put this question to our listeners as well on Twitter, in terms of the fact that Sabalenka is someone that we've talked about so much in terms of how good she is. And if she is someone who doesn't win more slams, it's almost a crime, because her abilities on the tennis court are there. She's one of the biggest hitters of all time, I would say, in terms of how hard she can strike the ball. But as you say, like, number two in the world after putting together so many semi-finals consistently across the whole of last year's season. What is it, Kim, that you'd say has stopped her from picking up more Grand Slams since she picked up that first title last year?
Yeah. Just to clarify, she is currently number two, but this is like solidified it, because obviously Coco Gauff
winner,
could well have
yes, the winner
snatched
of that match
that would... ranking. So yeah, just to clarify, because listeners, she is number two already, but yeah, just obviously that won't be taken away from her. She'll be looking to defend all her points. Yeah, I mean, she's obviously been like Miss Consistency over the last six Grand Slams or so. Long may it continue, because she's clearly shown that she can do it on all surfaces. I think, you know, at times she mentally has let it get to her and just not focused in on the strategy that she needs to. You know, like we saw in the US Open final, she just kind of got embroiled in kind of rallies with Gauff, and she wasn't really executing her game plan. And I think just making sure she's got that clarity of thought throughout. It's small things here and there. But I think, you know, we've seen her getting quite frustrated on court, that negative body language. And so I think, you know, it's always been within her grasp, but it's just about honing that energy in the right way, which, you know, we have seen more this tournament, and also see last year when she got the win here in Australia. So, you know, she's not, as you know, a spring chick. She's 25, I think, now, and still many, many years left ahead of her in her career. You know, it's so much more common on the women's side, isn't it, to grab slams when you're, you know, 19, 20, 21. We get used to that, but it's fine if you're waiting a few more years to break through. And that's obviously the pathway that she has taken.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on some of the points that you made, she does kind of go for a bit too much at times. She almost doubles down, hits the ball even harder. And maybe that's one of the things, that in those moments, if you are just pushing and in stress, you can make more unforced errors and push that ball beyond the baseline, which she did do quite a lot, actually, at the US Open. So I guess it is in those big moments. And she proved, obviously, the Australian Open last year, in those big moments, she was able to come through. But if a match gets very close, and being such an overwhelming favourite going into the final, obviously against Gauff, you'd say she had a point to prove and she might not necessarily have been the favourite for that match. Do you think that the fact that people think it's on her racket might lead her to be a little bit kind of stressed in the same situation, where she might have this pressure to really go out there and, you know, hit the cover of the ball, whether it goes in or out?
Yeah, because, you know, she's up against Qin Wen Zheng in the final, and she will be, of course, the favourite. She's an existing Grand Slam champion, way more experienced at this level. And yeah, it will be interesting to see if she handles that pressure, you know, compared to being a bit of an underdog, or being, you know, kind of going either way. So, I mean, let's look at Zheng, because she has come through. She's the second Chinese player in history to reach a Grand Slam final in the women's singles. We've had, you know, Li Na winning two slams, but that was, you know, 10 years ago now. And 10 years on from Li Na winning this very title, Zheng is, you know, one win away from potentially doing the same thing. She's had a very different pathway through the draw. She hasn't played a top 50 player. And in the semi-final, you know, Diana Yastremska currently down at, I think, 95 in the rankings. So kind of, it is hard to know what suddenly playing Sabalenka is going to be like, because it's going to be, you would expect, a kind of gulf in indifference in terms of the performance. But let's have a look at what we saw against Yastremska. You know, it was a straight sets victory for Zheng, 6-4, 6-4. Again, it was a bit kind of up and down. Yastremska went, I think, an early breakup, had points for 3-love, and then Zheng kind of just got rid of those kind of early kind of troubles and managed to, again, play her way more into the match, like she did in the quarter against Kalinskaya. And from there, we saw kind of her unroll her game and that strong serve that we've seen from her. But is that going to be enough against Sabalenka? Well, based on what you saw in the semis, Chris, from Zheng, do you think she's got enough weapons up her sleeve to trouble Sabalenka?
I think the difficulty is that with the serve, the technique isn't great and it can break down. I think that's something that you see, that quite often there's quite a low first serve percentage at times. But when the serve is made, it is a great shot. I think from a movement perspective, I think she's going to have to move very well. Going to have to chase down an awful lot of balls because Sabalenka is going to move her all over the court. But you have to play first right tennis. And so she is a player that can do that. But then again, and we will come on to this when we kind of preview a little bit more, she did get kind of hit off the court in the US Open last year. So it's definitely a case where she's going to need to up her game. And having not played, as you say, an opponent of the quality of Sabalenka or anywhere near the quality of Sabalenka, I think you have to question how prepared she will be for that match, especially in her first final. And you did make a nod to it already, but her run to the Australian Open final, she has played the world number 76, the world number 54, the world number 94, world number 95, world number 75, and world number 93. So that's an average ranking of 81. And it would mean, in her run to the final, Katie Bulter was the highest ranked opponent that she played, which, I mean, you wouldn't expect. It just doesn't sound right, does it? And I think a lot of people, you know, said that Raducanu shouldn't have got to that point. But she actually played like the world number 11 in Belinda Bencic. She played, I think, 17 ranked Sakkari at the time. And most of the players she faced were in the top 50. They just weren't top 10 opponents. That was the only thing that was missing from that run. So, I mean, but is this the easiest path to a slam final ever?
I'm just trying to work out if, you know, she'll be playing the world number 2, how would that affect the average ranking? I'm not that good at maths to do that in my head. But I think it's got to be. I mean, I don't know. Listeners, if you've got a statistic to prove otherwise, I'd love to see it, because obviously this isn't Zheng's fault. She can only play who's in the draw. And if the top seeds are losing early, then that's on them. She's just got the job done against whoever she has had to face. So, you know, full credit to her if she does go on and win the title and even getting to the final. You know, she's... It's absolutely not her fault that she's played players of that ranking, but it is an interesting, perspective, because, you know, you could argue that it would be a lot tougher to win, I don't know, the Miami title, for example, because you might have to battle through, you know, your ones, threes, sevens, twenties of the world. So it doesn't necessarily maybe give this title as much glory should she win it. But, you know, it's difficult, isn't it, when you talk about the draw and the opponents, because,
well, draws are made to be broken, aren't they, Kim?
They're not deserving, because that's not what we're trying to say. It's just I guess it's sport for you, isn't it? It's just how it goes. And you'd certainly, if I was in those shoes, I wouldn't care. I just want to go Grand Slam. So
and with against Yastremska, you would argue that you wouldn't necessarily want to face a Yastremska who's playing this well over potentially a top 10 player who maybe wouldn't
who's
play
not
as
in
well
form.
Of the day.
Exactly.
So I think there is a point to be made there, and especially on Yastremska, I think we have to say what an unbelievable performance this has been, given the fact that she hasn't been passed on at first round in years at a slam, and hasn't been anywhere near the fourth round since 2019. So it's an unbelievable effort from her to lift her game. And I mean, she's given herself chances and fought for every point in every match. And she played well. I think if you are going to set yourself up for Sabalenka, I've said maybe the path of not playing these high-ranked opponents doesn't help you with that. But Yastremska can also hit the ball very hard, and she does go for the winner in the first strike. So that is preparation in some ways for playing against Sabalenka, especially in the ferocity of Yastremska, her temperament on court, and the fact that, you know, Yastremska is going to give you lots of things to think about, from injury timeouts, which she's want to do and prone of doing, to, you know, kind of focus dips. There's lots of comparisons that you can make with Sabalenka in terms of the challenge that you'll have to beat the player, but also the person on court.
Yeah, and Yastremska has been playing, you know, higher level tennis than her current ranking. She's actually up into the top 40 at the end of this tournament as a result of her wins and all those nice ranking points that she's picked up this fortnight. I mean, Zheng will be looking, you know, in the final to kind of make sure her serve is up there. You know, we've seen when she struggled in matches, it's been when her first serve has, you know, been at a lower percentage, and she's, you know, she's upped it the last couple of matches after sort of a bit of a shaky start. So I think it'll be crucial in the final that she doesn't get off to a poor start where she's not serving well, because I think she's going to, you know, if she's, you might go like almost two thirds of a set down. And by then, in, you know, we know in women's tennis with best of three, it can be very hard to turn things around. You don't have much time to turn things around if you lose the first set quickly. And we've seen that a lot time finalists getting quite nervy, and they're already, you know, dropping the first set in half an hour.
Yeah, some terrible finals, haven't we? Especially, you know, we've seen, I mean, was it a Sharapova versus Serena? Obviously not a first time finalist at that time, but if you let it get away from you, or the moment get away from you, it can be very one-sided, especially against someone who is a big hitter. And if they're making their shots, you really have to upset that rhythm. So that's going to be a really big challenge there. And especially kind of looking to that match, what do you think that we can take from the last time that they played? I did mention it already. It was the quarterfinals of the US Open, and Sabalenka won 6-1, 6-4. And that was on her way to the final there. I mean, a pretty straightforward result, and a result that not all of us were expecting at the time to be straightforward, with Zheng kind of looking to be a player who was moving up into the world's top 15 and playing well in that tournament. I mean, she knocked out some great players en route to that quarterfinal. But what do you think that we can take from that? And will that have an impact on this final?
I mean, Sabalenka obviously has played her. She kind of knows her game. She knows what to expect. So it's not a complete surprise, because, you know, Zheng is a young player. You know, this time 2 years ago, she was making her slam debut here. So there's still a lot of players out there who will never have played her. And that can, you know, be a surprise when you play someone for the first time. So at least Sabalenka knows she's got a solid win over her at a slam recently. I think that would be a good confidence boost. But, you know, Zheng has certainly developed since then. You know, she did win the Most Improved Player of the Year award for the WTA Awards last year. She picked up her first two career titles. That last year was very much her breakout season. So, going into the start of this year, it's a fresh year on tour. She's going to be an improved player from that experience at the US Open. That was her first time at that stage. So she's got that in her, you know, her experience bag now. But I do think Sabalenka, you know, she's got obviously that previous win. She is the, you know, she's had this experience at slam level before. She's won this tournament. She knows what it takes. I do still think, even if Sabalenka gets a bit nervy with the expectation, you know, she has actually lost four of her last five finals, has Sabalenka. So clearly there's a bit of an issue getting the final job done. But I do think that she will have enough to get over the finish line against Zheng. And I think it's probably in straight sets as well.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to agree with you there. I think I haven't seen the same level of tennis from Zheng in this tournament so far. And I think that Sabalenka has just played at a level that's been kind of poles apart from pretty much every player in the draw, except obviously in that sort of first set against Coco Gauff. I think whatever happens, it's going to be straight sets. I think with these players, it will depend on who is serving and playing really well. But then you never know. You honestly never know, especially if we talk about some women's game, it can run away from you, but it can also do it either way. And I think that say, for instance, Jung comes out there and she's like, this is my moment. And sometimes players do seize the moment. And I think that could really shock Sabalenka and that could really derail her as well. So I'm going to say Sabalenka in two as well, because I think that is, to borrow the phrase, you'd be an idiot not to think Sabalenka would win this. But at the same time, I'm saying I can see her not winning it as well. So hedging my bets for Sabalenka in two.
I'm also just wondering, you know, 10 years ago, Li Na won this title and Stan Wawrinka won the men's. So it was someone that wasn't Novak Djokovic winning the men's and, or you know, or Rafa or Federer. So maybe it's we're on for a Chinese winner and someone that's not Djokovic. Maybe it happens every 10 years. I'm just saying.
Well, that could be. It could be another prophecy, Kim. And also, I was going to quiz you on something, actually. This isn't directly related to the women's side of things. But I saw that could you tell me, this is a trivia question, the last players who contested an Australian Open final that did not have Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal or Roger Federer in?
I think I can, because I've seen it in the news, I think, Chris. Marat Safin and Leighton Hewitt, was it 2005,
but yes.
2005, oh.
Very impressive, it was four sets and yeah, Safin picked up the Australian Open title, so... I just thought that was also quite interesting to think that it's been that long. I mean, as someone said, Alcaraz was under 2 years old at the time. So that is a bit scary. And it's scary to think as well, you know, that when Nali won the title, that was 10 years ago now. She's been kind of all around the Australian Open this year, playing the Legends with Hanchikova. And it's just great to see that if the story is there, I'm sure that she's hung around for it and she'll be cheering her on from the sidelines.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one final that we've already had happen has been the mixed doubles final. This was a very close one. Went down to the wire, champions tiebreak, 11-9 it was, to Su Weishei and Jan Zielinski. So they beat Neil Skupski and Desiree Krawczyk. So Britain's Neil Skupski just missing out on the mixed doubles title. But Su Weishei picking up, you know, another slam, but actually her first mixed doubles Grand Slam title. So she's got a few in the trophy cabinet for the women's doubles already. She'll be playing for that title on Sunday, but she's finally got her first mixed doubles title, which is nice. And yeah, very pleasing for her, although sad for British fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable that she hadn't won a mixed doubles. I had to check that. But I mean, since she's returned, I mean, she's 38 years old. She won Roland Garros last year. She won Wimbledon. And now she's picked up the mixed doubles at the Australian Open. So we're talking about age just being a number. World number one, Djokovic, is in his sort of mid to late 30s. Bopana, number one, in his 40s. And then if she does seal the victory in the women's doubles, she'll be up to number two again, because Mertens actually played tournaments last year with Storm Hunter, so they have swapped that partnership. But it just shows you know, there's something about experience that really pays off in these situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And experience has proven it's worth as well with the wheelchair doubles, because Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid, a British pair, have also won their fifth Australian Open men's wheelchair doubles title in a row. So fantastic from them. They beat Takuya Miki and Takito Oda straight sets in the final. And I think Hewitt is also bidding for the singles as well tomorrow. He's playing Oda in that. So hopefully he will be able to get both titles. And Andy Lapthorne, also British player in the quad wheelchair, him and American teammate David Wagner, they won the quad final. So we do have some British success down under. Skupski couldn't get it done in the mixed doubles, but we have had British success in the wheelchair event. So well done, all of those guys. And yeah, good luck to Hewitt for the final as well. But that brings us to a close for today. We will all be back together for the first time in a long time since before the tournament on Sunday to wrap up on the singles finals and the other finals action, women's, men's doubles, etc. So we look forward to you joining us then. Chris, you off to go and do your Vegemite shopping, I hope, in the meantime.
Well, I need to, don't I? And cheer on Bopana.
Cheering Bopana on with a Vegemite drink, perhaps.
Yes, a warm one.
Yeah. Well, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of Tennis Weekly Podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all of the action from the Australian Open. We have one more round to go and we'll be bringing the tournament to a close over the weekend. But we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and all major podcasting platforms out there. So if you do like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And this is also our final plea to ask for you to very kindly vote for us in the Sports Podcast Awards. Entries do close on the 28th, so the link is in the description and it's also pinned to our social channels. You can also follow us on our social channels or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, X, TikTok and YouTube. The handle for all of those is Tennis Weekly Pod. You can also purchase our lovely Tennis Weekly merch. And the website for that is etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast. You can email us at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com or you can check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we'll be back on Sunday at Tennis Weekly HQ for our final AO catch up. So I do hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon. Goodbye.